From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Dreaming about providence and whether mice and men have second tries. Maybe we've been living with our eyes half open. Maybe we're bent and broken.
It's not marginal anymore. In fact, some of it is going mainstream. Christian rock is huge. Singing the Lord's praises to a backbeat, heavy metal, pop, or country style is a billion-dollar-plus business. And it's not just evangelicals grooving to the music anymore. This hour, On Point, we're looking at the sprawling reach, culture, and music of that giant parallel universe, Christian rock. You can join the conversation. Are you one of the millions who grab up the songs of POD, Jars of Clay, Newsboys, or behind us here, Switchfoot's Meant to Live? Is Christian rock now crossing a cultural divide, or is it a symbol of that divide? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-8255. Talk. We're going to hear lots of music this hour, and right now I'm joined from Washington by rock music writer and senior contributor at Spin magazine, Andrew Bojan. He spent a year traveling the country on the wide trail of Christian rock. He shares what he heard and learned in a new book with a heck of a title, Body Piercing Saved My Life: Inside the Phenomenon of Christian Rock. Andrew Bojan, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
I have to say right off, I just thought this was a terrific book. I didn't know much about this world, and you've got not only the music, but really an interesting angle here on American culture today and some of the very big veins in it. You spent a lot of your life in good old pop music, mainstream rock and roll America. What tempted you to go for a year into Christian rock, Andrew?
Well, the simple answer is that it just seemed like a really good story. Talking to friends in Richmond, Virginia, where I was living just before I moved up to D.C., I found out that having a past in Christian rock was a real common thread, a real common experience for my friends. And so I just wanted to look into it a little bit further because I never read anything about it, you know?
And once you lift the lid on this, what you find and describe, and I've seen pieces of it myself, is a gigantic parallel universe. Pop music may rule the mainstream radio waves, but an awful lot of radio stations are putting this out, a huge number. The number of albums being sold is huge. Give us a sense of the dimension, the scale of the Christian rock universe, Andrew.
Well, as you said, you know, it is about a $1 billion-a-year industry. As a genre, it keeps gaining in market share while others keep losing. It's bigger than jazz and classical and new age combined. It's, you know, it's really pretty underreported as a part of pop culture.
And as a kind of world in itself, does it mimic the whole range of mainstream rock? I mean, I'm hearing everything, and we'll hear some of it, all the way from hip-hop to sort of country. Does it have the full range of sounds going on?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, whereas for a long time it was kind of a backwater musically, Christian rock has really taken some great leaps forward, and now you can have pretty much any kind of music. The old joke was that Christian rock was always just sort of like what was popular, but now you've actually gotten some genres, Christian bands that are actually leading.
Leading with a kind of and bleeding as well, as you report,
yeah,
into the sort of secular pop charts.
Indeed, yeah. You know, Switchfoot being a really conspicuous example, POD. But also, interestingly, a lot of bands happening on more of an underground level, Under Oath, for example, who are going to be one of the headliners on the Vans Warped Tour this year, are a Christian band, and unapologetically so.
The big moment in this, and I guess it'd be good if you would take us back to when this got started. There's deep history here, and we'll come to that, but there's also current history. I mean, there was a time, and you report early in the book, you remember from your own high school days when evangelical friends would try and tempt you out to Christian concerts, and they were, to your ear at that time, sort of the height of dorkiness. But then it began to come over. What was the crossover moment here into a more mainstream sound?
Well, the earliest crossover moment was probably when Amy Grant crossed over. She, which, you know, was in the 80s. But she was, you know, the daughter of a wealthy Nashville doctor, and really had access to a lot better studio conditions than a lot of her peers. She really, like, insisted on quality from the beginning, and mainstream audiences began to accept her. You know, at first she was sort of a freak, but, you know, just the idea that somebody could be a Christian rock artist and a good singer-songwriter was kind of revolutionary.
She brought mainstream attention to her stripe of Christian rock. She also brought kind of mainstream sensuality and a much more mainstream pop sound into that whole world. Here's a track from 1988. This is Amy Grant singing openly about her faith in her 1988 hit, Lead Me On. Amy Grant in 1988, you know, throughout this music and in your book, Andrew Bojan, I'm struck by how kind of classic, not only rock sounds, but messages don't sound so strange here. I mean, rock has always had a kind of a spiritual yearning element to it. When the Christian piece comes in, it sometimes sounds Christian. Otherwise, other times it just sounds like a young person or anybody yearning for a way.
I mean, that's sort of been the strategy for a long time to cross over Christian artists. What you were saying before is absolutely true. I mean, rock and roll has its genesis in the commingling of gospel and blues. So it's not, you know, there's always been sort of a striving for transcendence in rock music. It's not really all that out of character. But to have messages that can be read either way, you know, Switchfoot being a great example, we were meant to live for so much more. That means one thing to a Christian audience. It means absolutely something different to people driving home from a lousy day at work.
And it works when you take it into the realm of love as well. I mean, there's a long biblical tradition through scripture and song well before rock of mm-hmm. love expressed for the Lord. The lyrics can sound like love songs that could show up on any pop radio station sometimes.
Yeah, and indeed, even in the Bible, when you read, like, Song of Solomon, it's a very sensuous book, which, you know, is a tradition that Amy Grant tapped into. And I think, you know, sometimes to controversy in the Christian rock world.
Andrew, what's your own religious background? Did you come to this as a Christian, born-again Christian, as none of the above?
I'm none of the above. I'm an agnostic, I guess would be the best description. It's just you know, for me, the interest has always been kind of cultural.
And when your colleagues, your rock and roll world music critic colleagues, heard that you were going to spend a significant chunk of time listening to and following Christian rock, did they think you were onto something, or did they think you were nuts?
They all thought I was insane. That, you know, the overwhelming sentiment was, you know, what are you getting yourself into here? My wife was convinced that, you know, people were going to try to convert me the whole time.
And what did you find? Were you constantly being proselytized? Who's the listening audience? And I realize it's huge, but what's the face of it?
Well, the first part of it, no. There was only one time that somebody tried to evangelize me. I was talking to some guys who ran a hip-hop label, and we were in Nashville for the Gospel Music Association Week. And as I was leaving the interview, one of them handed me a tract, and it was the first time in 6 months of research that anybody had even sort of reached out to me like that. But in terms of the audience itself, it's often younger. I find that this is, that Christian music is almost entirely consumed, Christian rock, I guess I should say, by people under 30.
Under 30, and that's just the beginning of describing this group. How would you define the Christian right audience? I mean, the Christian rock audience, excuse me.
I would say it's largely, though hardly totally white, middle class. And I would say, you know, your typical, like, suburban, exurban kid. It's not just something that you find in the flyover states. You know, the biggest markets for Christian rock are New York City and Los Angeles.
And for listeners who don't listen, and I mean, listen or not, it's up to you, but people who aren't aware of this universe, what are they missing in terms of what's going on in America today?
Well, I think, you know, this is a huge part of evangelical culture, and evangelical culture is a huge part of America. You know, you look at the numbers, 23% of the country is evangelical, and that's a big part of this country. I think if you want to understand people, looking at their music is a really good way to start.
We're going to go out of this segment hearing DC Talks Jesus Freak from 1995. What's the message here, Andrew?
This was a really amazing song because this was one that sort of showed that artists could do really good stuff, draw on contemporary influences, and not be lame Christian stuff. And what they said is, I don't care if people think I'm a Jesus freak.
We're going to come back and look at a lot more of the music and culture of the Christian rock world. My guest is Andrew Bojohn. He writes for Spin Magazine, has written for The Washington Post, The Guardian, Salon. He's got a new book out, Body Piercing Saved My Life, Inside the Phenomenon of Christian Rock. We will we'll also talk about where you got that title, Andrew. Stand by in Washington. Listeners, you can join this conversation at 800-423-8255. Are you a fan, or is this an invisible world to you? What do you hear? 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Christian rock. Here's San Diego-based POD and their hit single, Roots in Stereo, from the 2006 album, Testify. POD with a big hit there. We're talking today with Andrew Bojohn. His new book is Body Piercing Saved My Life, Inside the Phenomenon of Christian Rock. We're really looking at this huge reach and culture and music and business of Christian rock, the parallel pop universe inhabited by many millions of Americans. Are you one of the millions who snatch up songs from POD, Newsboys, Jars of Clay, or have you never heard of them? And if you're a straddler with an ear in mainstream and Christian rock, compare the two for us. What's the difference today? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Megan's calling from Somerville, South Carolina. Hi, Megan. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I'd just like to say I'm a huge fan of the Christian rock. A couple years ago, I found the station, and ever since I've started listening to that, I've never turned back. I believe that when you listen to good things, it makes you want to carry out good deeds through your day. And if you can fill your life with a good message through song, then it can just only improve your life.
How were you drawn? How did you come to Christian rock, Megan? Did a church send you? Did you just stumble into it on the radio?
Just stumbled into it on the radio, and at the same time I started going to a church that has a full band who plays from conventional hymns up to the Christian rock in the church, and, you know, it just draws in the children, the teenagers. You know, I'm 32. My husband's 38. That's all we listen to in our house. We encourage our 13-year-old as well to listen to people like Switchfoot and POD, because we just believe if we fill him with goodness around, then that's what he'll take forth into the world.
And when you listen to that, do you now feel out of it, you know, off in the margins of society, or in your neighborhood? Do you feel it in the midst of it? Are your neighbors listening to the same thing?
I can't say that my neighbors listen to the same thing, and my friends give me a lot of funny looks when they get in the car, but I don't change the channel, you know, and I get a lot of mixed looks from my friends because they're into very different types of music. But they know that where my heart is at, and they agree with it that it's good, and it's only getting better.
Megan,
time goes on, it just gets better.
We hear that, and we've got it, and there in POD, that's certainly no Pat Boone. Megan, thanks for your call. Andrew Bojan, you say that there's a kind of a generation that came up here and has taken over from the sort of image of old men in blue polyester suits at the contemporary camp meeting. It's a whole new crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the people doing Christian rock now are the kids of the hippies who sort of came to Jesus and the Jesus movement of the 70s. And, you know, the big innovation there was bringing rock music into church because people who'd, you know, been searching for a while as hippies weren't ready to quite give up on rock music as a sound yet. They just wanted to get away from what they saw as its message of, you know, death and destruction.
And what about Megan's description of what brought her? I mean, I have to say, in my daily life, I'm not surrounded by this, but I have relatives who certainly are, and it is the soundtrack of their lives. And I think, like Megan, they're drawn to what they see as an inspirational lyric line in a lot of this, though there's anger and there's hatred of the devil and so on here, too. But she's inspired by listening to this. Is that a common theme?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what she was saying about wanting to listen to music with good messages, I mean, I think it's a lot the same as friends of mine who try to eat only organic food with, you know, the idea that it's going to make them healthier in a way.
Make them healthier and her family healthier. I mean, this is now the soundtrack of her household's life.
Totally, totally.
Brad's calling from Hardeeville, South Carolina. Hi, Brad. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
We're good. What do you think, Brad?
I'm a huge fan of Christian rock and have been for some time now. And I am a born-again Christian. And my comment was kind of what the other caller said. About, I think the main difference between Christian rock and the rock of, you know, that's in our pop culture today,
mm-hmm.
is it's not just the style or the sound of it, but it's a lot of what the last caller said was it's the message that makes all the difference in the world. You know, some of my favorite bands are Hillsong United and DC Talk and songs like that, and I listen to it all day long, and it's the message that really pulls me in and draws me in on top of the sound also.
And Brad, let me ask the same question to you. Do you feel outside the mainstream when you're listening to this, or is this becoming mainstream in your community?
I think it's becoming mainstream. You know, sometimes I guess you feel a little outside because you feel like it's not the most popular thing to be listened to. But I think that the way Christian rock is going nowadays, and it's got an edgy sound, it's got a contemporary sound, that it's at that point where someone who's not a believer, who's not into it, can say, you know, that's cool, that's nice, and it's the sound that draws them in, and then as the sound draws them in, they can hopefully grab hold of that message also.
Brad, thank you very much for calling. Andrew, you write a fair amount about the lead singer for Pedro the Lion King, if I've got that right. A significant.
It's just Pedro the Lion.
Pedro the Lion, excuse me. Gosh. tell us about him and what we can learn from sort of his story. This is certainly not Pat Boone.
No. David Bazan is a really interesting guy. He grew up in the church. His dad was a music minister in the Assemblies of God. And when he started playing rock music, his band, Pedro the Lion, was a Christian band. And he really went through a long crisis of faith that actually started with him getting involved in politics. He'd never really questioned whether his dad's politics were his own, and as a result, you know, he had a very strong reaction to it. But what's been really interesting about Dave Bazan is that he still plays Christian events, even though he himself is really uncomfortable with the cultural definition of Christianity in America.
Let's listen to a little bit from Pedro the Lion, David Bazan, Foregone Conclusion here. I don't know if we'll probably hear it bleeped out here, but he is not afraid of the profane when he gets cranked up.
To be the steering, the conversation toward the
David Bazan with Foregone Conclusion from Pedro the Lion. You describe being at a concert, Andrew, where the crowd goes wild for this guy who's hardly an old-fashioned image of Christian propriety, and the crowd throwing panties at the stage. Is that a Christian rock concert?
That's a very unusual Christian rock event. I think that the panties being thrown was kind of ironic, and the reason I threw that into the book was just to make the point that Christian rock shows aren't necessarily what you think they might be. You know, Dave Bazan is not scared of ruffling people's feathers. In fact, I think he really enjoys it. And what's interesting about it is him using the F word in one of his songs is hugely controversial. It's the kind of thing that you know, a lot of people would outside of the Christian church find hard to grasp. But profanity is a huge issue. And
you describe him backstage at the concert chugging a gallon jar of water and vodka. I mean, the worlds have become very mixed here. This is not just a kind of this is not a nunnery.
No. Dave Bazan is certainly not a monk in any sense of the word. He drinks. He uses profanity. He's also a very devoted husband and father, and you know, he kind of flies in the face of a lot of the strictures of Christian music in that they say you can't be all those things at once.
And yet, there it is, once the rock and roll gets cranked up. Body Piercing Saved My Life. That will sound odd to those kind of not in the in-crowd here of this world. But we're not talking about ears and nose, though you may see that at the concerts. We're talking about, well, you describe it. Where'd you get your title?
It was from a T-shirt. It was a T-shirt that I kept seeing at Christian rock shows. It showed. It said that slogan on the front, and on the back it would show Jesus' hands with holes in them.
The stigmata, the nail holes from the cross, there's the body piercing that people are talking
about. Right, and it seemed like a really good symbol for the way that Christian rock imbues secular rock symbols with new meaning.
At the end of this long year, how did you find yourself feeling? I mean, there's a lot of money in this now. You describe how Nashville has come in and really put its commercial chops around this once they start starting to take off. How do you ultimately see it? Is this a genuine spiritual movement? Is it just an alternative sort of pop sound? Is it exploited marketing channel?
I think it's all those things. I think in America, it's always hard to get away from music becoming a commodity, and a lot of mainstream Christian music is a commodity. There, you know, it's really hard to tell a lot of mainstream Christian bands from one another. And as someone who you know covers music extensively, I see a lot of the same patterns. On the same time, you've got to look at how important this music is to the people who consume it. The two people who called in said, you know, that it really charges them up, and that's very important, and I think that's the kind of thing that you need to look at without being dismissive.
Let's hear a little more here. Here's Cutlass, Not What You See, from their 2004 Sea of Faces album. One of the Christian bands making a big splash. They've sold 650,000 records, released their fourth album. Here's Not What You See, 2004. Cutlass, Christian Rock, 2004. Andrew Bojohn is with us. We're joined right now from Woodbury, Connecticut, by Randall Balmer, a professor of American religion at Barnard College. He's editor-at-large for Christianity Today, a self-described evangelical Christian. He's written about the band Jars of Clay in his book Mine Eyes Have Seen the Glory, a journey into the evangelical subculture in America. His new book out next month is Thy Kingdom Come. Randall Balmer, thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be here.
What do you hear? What do you see in this parallel universe, as Andrew Bojohn describes it?
It's a great term, by the way. I like that term a lot because I think it really is very descriptive. I think this is part of what I call the evangelical subculture in America. That is this whole world that is not only Christian music, it's also a separate world of institutions such as seminaries, colleges, Bible camps, publishing houses, missionary societies, and so forth, that really exists largely unseen to the larger culture. And the CCM world, the contemporary Christian music world, is a big part of that.
What's your sense of the scale of that? When we talk about a parallel universe, like the mainstream but different, this is no longer a tiny niche by any stretch.
Absolutely. It's a huge world. There's no question about that. And I think, with all respect, Andrew may have underestimated the number of evangelicals in America. I think he said something in the 20s, 20% or so. And I think it's probably double that. It's the polling data come back fairly consistently somewhere between 40 to 46% of the U.S. population. So it's a huge movement, although it is internally diverse, so you have a lot of divisions within that movement.
I want to look at that, but keep our callers in with us at the same time. Devin's calling from Worcester, Massachusetts. Hi, Devin, you're on the air.
Hi. I'd just like to say that I think this is probably one of the worst things that has ever happened to a country. This seems like basically the church has realized that over the years they lose a lot of their youth population to sources of rebellion and sources of freedom and expression like rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
And they have decided to usurp the very thing that is their antithesis. So it's really an ingenious way of, instead of defeating your enemy, taking over his show.
So they describe it as angelic. You see it as demonic. And the downside in the end is, Devin?
Wait a minute. I don't see it as quite demonic.
Okay, I'm exaggerating. But
I see it as extremely flawed, although good-intentioned. And it seems like it's a tool being used to solidify a political base, and that's what's really scary about it, because these people really never have to deal with reality in general when they're in these sort of little close-knit circles of people that all believe the same thing.
Devin, you widen the conversation wonderfully. Andrew Bojan, how about it? A tool, a Trojan horse, a kind of a strategy here, and one that bothers Devin is a diminishment of freedom. How do you see it?
Well, you know, the concept of Christian music being used as a tool is a long-standing one, and for a long time it has been, and a lot of the mainstream stuff is. It's not so much the music, it's the message, and that was always the Achilles heel of Christian rock. It's only been in the last few years that you've started to see bands that have really been kind of pushing, you know, like Dave Bazan, incorporating doubt into their theology, but I think, you know, another interesting point that he raised is being around only people who agree with you, and I have to say that I find that to be the case among my friends in New York City as well.
If they're in this world, it's a closed world, Randall Balmer. How about it? Is this a closed world?
It is a closed world, and I'm not sure how much the Christian rock or the Christian music really contributes to the religious right agenda. I guess I defer to the author on that, who's really spent more time with it. I don't think that's the big thing, and I don't find it as nefarious as the caller does, to be honest. I think that a lot of this stuff is really quite good, and I don't pretend by any means to be a music critic or an expert on the issue, but I have to say that the Jars of Clay group that I spent some time with, I thought was very impressive, and I think both lyrically and musically, it is it's top rate.
We'll listen to them right now. Randall Balmer, Andrew Bojan, please stand by. We'll go out of this segment with Jars of Clay. Hear their song, God Be Merciful to Me, one of the biggest crossover hits ever by a Christian band. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, Bicon.com. And RHR International, an executive and organizational development firm committed to integrating executives into new roles.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the huge reach and culture and music and business of Christian rock, the pop parallel universe inhabited by many millions of Americans. You can join us if you're a listener. What's Christian rock do for you? Is it the message or the beat that keeps you listening? And is Christian rock crossing a cultural divide as it bleeds onto secular playlists? Or is it a symbol of a cultural divide? Here is, let's listen to American Idol from season number 4 of that show on television, Carrie Underwood, with her hit, Jesus Take the Wheel.
She said, I'm sorry for the way I've been living my life. I know I've got to change. So from now on tonight, Jesus, take the wheel.
Joined in this hour by Andrew Bojohn, rock music writer. His new book is Body Piercing Saved My Life Inside the Phenomenon of Christian Rock, and also by Randall Balmer from Woodbury, Connecticut. His new book coming out next month is Thy Kingdom Come, How the Religious Right Distorts the Faith and Threatens America, and Evangelicals Lament. There's some cross currents going on. Right now, Jim is calling from Florence, South Carolina. Hi, Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you think, Jim?
Well, as I've been on hold, I've heard so much I want to respond to.
Yes, please.
You know, initially, I just wanted to call in and say that, you know, the demographic of folks being under 30 years of age, I'm sure that's probably true, those that appreciate this music more. But I'm 55. And I spend a lot of time in my car, and I go to a church where there's contemporary worship. While I'm on the road, I listen to this music. And
contemporary worship means music like this in the church.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up in a tradition of traditional worship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stained glass windows and processing in and processing out with the choir and
right.
everything else. And when we moved back to our hometown, we started looking for a church and wanted to go to a church where there was something going on. And we found all the churches that were doing traditional worship were such a snore. you know, really. You know, it's sort of like you come in, sit down, you listen, you get your ticket punched, and you go home and feel good for another week that you've done something like go to church.
But you can't fall asleep with this music. Dave, let me ask you, has this music actually changed your faith or the way you demonstrate it, celebrate it?
It's informed my faith. It's made my faith it's just an integral part of it. I enjoy groups like David Crowder and Chris Tomlin. Previous column mentioned Hillsong United, Kirk Franklin, Toby Mac, all of those people I listen to.
And you're 55, and it's working for you. We're very happy for your call, Jim. Thank you so much. Andrew, Randall, I want to look a little bit at the history here. I mean, we mentioned it briefly before. Andrew, you were saying that it goes way back to camp meetings, and Christianity is certainly, I mean, all the way back, you know, go back as far as you like, Gregorian chants. Music has been a pretty attractive, compelling part of many religious traditions, including the Christian tradition. But what about the sort of American history that brings us to this moment? Andrew, where do you see this? Is this just a reassertion of something that's very old?
Well, I'd certainly defer to Professor Balmer on the early history because his book was a real help to me in understanding that. When you're talking about the roots of this stuff, it's, you know, we talked about the Christians sort of embracing the hippies. And I think that that's really the crux of it there.
Christians embracing the hippies. Randall Balmer, how does that moment fit into your historic spectrum?
Well, I think it is an important moment. There's no question about that. And that occurred primarily in Southern California in the early part of the 1970s. But I'd like to put this in a little larger context in terms of American history and American evangelicalism, in that evangelicals throughout American history have shown a remarkable knack for speaking the language or the idiom of the culture in any given circumstance. You have, for example, George Whitefield, an itinerant evangelist coming from England in the 1730s, 1740s, and the 50s, traveling around the Atlantic colonies and doing open-air preaching and using theatrical flourishes in order to bring the people in to hear him. You have people like the circuit riders in the early part of the 19th century or the coal porters riding the rail lines in order to bring their message, the gospel, to the people. In the 20th century, the use of media, radio, television, and also now the contemporary Christian music. And Andrew's quite right that this has its origins in rock music itself has its origins in Christian or gospel music, and this is part of the ability of evangelicals to speak the language of the culture.
Let me ask you, though, rock music itself has been no mean player in understanding the zeitgeist, helping create it, but also knowing how to sing to it, to sell records. What do you read in this moment when we've got this very large parallel universe of music that's developed? Does it mean that mainstream rock is no longer speaking with the same success to mainstream American culture or a big chunk of it, Randall Balmer?
I would defer to Andrew on that. I'm not a music critic.
I'm getting you guys just backwards. Well, okay, Andrew, you have your whack at that.
Well, I think obviously rock music really does reach a lot of people, general market rock music. I you know, there's still plenty of a market for death and destruction and everything that, you know, we've grown to love from secular music.
But mainstream rock has not always been death and destruction. It's had a lot of, actually, historically, a lot of inspiring themes in it as well, about love, about hope, about pull me through, about seeking.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I've always found to be interesting when I've been talking to people about this book is sort of the differing views. You know, Christians tend to view mainstream rock as just this haven of drug use and devil worshiping, and it's very easily caricatured, just like Christian music is very easily caricatured from the outside.
Yes.
Steve's calling from St. Catharines in Ontario, Canada. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi there. Well, you guys have touched on a lot of what I already wanted to bring up, and you've kind of expanded the conversation, but I just want to step back. You guys mentioned that there were mainstream bands that were offering the same kind of inspiration, and I could mention bands like The Band or Woody Guthrie or The Flaming Lips or Low or Old Time Religion, using both indie bands and kind of the mainstream pop bands. But I still have to say I look at this as a cynical business ploy.
I don't think, again, I defer to Andrew on this, but I don't think it's entirely derivative. I really don't. And I think perhaps in the early years there was a lot of that, and a lot of it was pretty bad music, at least from my my perspective. But I think Andrew's absolutely right that in the last few years it has grown up, so to speak. There is a kind of integrity and even artistry to a lot of this. Is money involved? Sure it is, but that's no less true of any other group.
On the other hand, there is a lot of marketing, and it's very conscious and deliberate here. Andrew, you write about the group called Mute Math. They're actually in a case where they have they're suing Warner Brothers for marketing them as a Christian band. Let's just, for a moment, listen to their 2004 song, Control, Mute Math.
Take me far away from here. There is no better loss than to lose my
Mute Math's Control. Andrew Bojan, what's the story there? Warner Brothers wants to market them as Christian rock and they don't want the label?
Yeah, it's a pretty bizarre case. I did speak with Mute Math for my book, and they, you know, they're Christians and they're very upfront about that. And I do think it's a little odd that they signed to Word, which is a Christian label, and are worried about being signed, you know, viewed as a Christian act, but when I did talk to them, they talked about setting up their own label because they really wanted to screen out what they called the ugly stuff, the Jesus per minute factor, the really kind of heavy-handed Christian radio stuff.
And Warner Brothers pushed it anyway, so they've still got the label. Connor's calling from Harrisville, New Hampshire. Connor, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just calling in sort of a question about where the genre lines of Christian rock are drawn, and specifically you mentioned the band Under Oath.
Yes.
And I'm 20 years old. I listen to a lot of music that in the scene that Under Oath is in, which is not the Christian rock scene. I don't know how familiar you are with the music or how familiar your listeners are, but it's very brutal music compared to what you've played on the show. And I saw them in between two very non-Christian bands, and there's a lot of sort of violent dancing going on at that sort of show, and I think it's very, a sort of crossover right there.
Andrew Bojan, speak to that. What is that ethos? What's that world? The Under Oath, more brutal sound in Christian
he's
rock.
He's absolutely right. And as I mentioned before, Under Oath are going to be on the Vans Warped Tour. When I talked to them, they were like, heck yeah, we're a Christian band, and they always make themselves available to talk to people after shows. But this is, you know, they're very comfortable in the world, as Christians would call it. I mean, it's been an age-old question for evangelical Christians to whether they're going to be in the world or of it, and not be of it. So, you know, Under Oath, I think, straddle that line beautifully.
But what are the lyrics when a Christian rock band is singing a brutal song? That I've got some cognitive dissonance around that. What are they singing about?
Well, I think that, you know, Christians feel the same things that everybody else does. You know, like Christian bands are, at that age, Under Oath, are all in their late teens, early 20s, they're confused, they're angry, you know, they express all that stuff. It doesn't have to be Jesus all the time to be a Christian rock band.
But is it like, I'm going to beat down the devil, or when it goes brutal?
Well, that particular band is what's often called an emo band, an emotional band. They really speak about their own feelings and what they're going through. Sometimes that's struggle, sometimes that's just being angry because your girlfriend's not going to talk to you.
Tony's calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Tony. You're on the air.
Thank you. Well, I started listening in the early 90s with people like Steve Taylor and the like. You know, I Want to Be a Clone. It's basically let you think you don't have to be Jerry Falwell or a Pat Robertson type of Christian. In fact, you don't look for someone else to tell you what to think. You only have to be God's type of Christian and think for yourself. Don't walk in there getting lockstep and say, tell me what to think. And that's really why I love the music.
And do you find that range of perspective in the music that you hear out there, Tony?
Well, it's like any type of music. Once it started making money, it started getting commercial. And, you know, there's a lot of music and not so much talent. So it's like any type of music. Pick and choose. There's good talent out there, and there's commercial drivel out there. So you pick what you like.
Well, you're from Nashville. Maybe you should know. Randall Balmer, how about the politics of this? I'm looking at your new book, Thy Kingdom Come, How the Religious Right Distorts the Faith and Threatens America, and Evangelicals Lament. What about the politics of Christian rock?
Well, I think there's no question that many evangelicals do list to the right politically, and this new book, I don't want to step on Andrew's toes here, but this new book is trying to call that into question and get people to reconsider all that. I think there's probably some extent to which the artists in the CCM world are trying to kind of reinforce those sorts of values, but I don't think that's the main thrust of it, at least in my judgment.
Andrew, how about it? By the end of your long journey over that year, and you start out very agnostic, and I guess you remain there, but you say, you write, I have become a fan, not just of the music, but of Christians and of Jesus himself, oh my rock critic. You say, to me, the message of the gospel is love one another, look out for the less fortunate, and try to walk gently on the earth, and I love that. But is that the message of Christian rock?
I'd say there's no one message, and you know, there is another huge part of the gospel that I'm ignoring there, which is love God with all your heart, and it's just not really possible for me. In terms of the politics, you know, they are all over the place. I met lots of bands who believe in sort of an almost socialist lifestyle, like people like Me Without You, who follow, you know, the second chapter of Acts, where all the disciples lived keeping everything in common. But, you know, Christian bands, yes, a lot of them are personally conservative, but they're also interested in what they call social justice issues. When Bono was unveiling the One campaign, he was standing next to Michael W. Smith and Jars of Clay.
There you have it. Do you think ultimately that this is bleeding? Is it going to bleed into mainstream rock and roll? Is it already informing mainstream rock and roll?
I'd say with the numbers, it has to. I mean, Professor Ballmer is absolutely correct. It's nearly half the country.
Half the country, Randall Ballmer. How about it? Does this become a new blend, a cultural blend in America at some point, or do we keep the two different parallel universes going?
Oh, that's a really good question. I usually beg off such questions by saying I'm a historian, not a prognosticator. But I think there probably is more interplay between the two. I think that's been the case for evangelicals over the last several decades. They've lost some of their wariness about the outside world, which they believed for much of the 20th century to be both corrupt and corrupting. And so they've become more eager to engage the culture a bit less suspiciously, I think. Now, I think the other part of the question, will the larger secular culture absorb or try to appropriate some of what's going on in the Christian music world? I think it is happening, and again, the book, which sounds fascinating to me, I look forward to reading it, indicates that is happening to some degree. I suspect there's still going to be a good bit of division between the two worlds.
Well, it's a great big world on both sides of that fence at this time, and some of the fence coming down. I'm very grateful to both of you for being with us today. Randall Ballmer at Barnard College in Woodbury, Connecticut, editor-at-large at Christianity Today. Mr. Ballmer, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Andrew Bojan, thanks for doing the reporting. Thanks for bringing home the book. It's just terrific. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
Andrew Bojan, author of Body Piercing Saved My Life, Inside the Phenomenon of Christian Rock, will go out with Newsboys. Here's their mega hit, He Reigns.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.